UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
Welcome back to Fast Break Friday on the V Show, presented by Universal Windows Direct on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
This is Fast Break Friday with Nick Valvano, Perry Johnson.
They called in. They went to the bullpen. They called out the righty.
Coach Bob has taken the couple hours off, fighting a cold. Don't know what it is, Perrin. But we've got to give him a break. He has to talk tomorrow and Sunday, I think, and Monday or Tuesday. Monday, Tuesday. He's got a full schedule. So Bob is gone to rest up, and you are at the plate. No balls, no strikes.
Yeah, I mean, bottom of the ninth or top of the ninth.
Which one do you want?
I'd rather be the top. I get another chance to swing.
What would be your entrance music? Are you going to come in to enter Sandman like Mariano Rivera? Or?
I'd probably be like James Brown, the big payback. I think that would be
Oh, there we go. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's, James Brown was ahead of his time, in my opinion.
I would prefer you to be like Reggie Jackson.
What did he play? I forget. I would like to be a Reggie Jackson. I forget. Did he have music going to the plate?
Probably not then. Yeah. Probably not.
I would have loved to know when did that started. Like, who originated the starting.
If they did have it, then Reggie Jackson definitely had it, though.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Reggie Jackson, you would get the darkest music in the world to play because he was putting people away, man.
Oh, man.
He could knock it out of the park at the most opportune times.
Oh, man. New York back then, too. Mr. October. That had to be quite the time.
We were talking, I think we're going to talk to somebody about Kobe and you growing up in California. I'm sure that he had a special place for you. And I look back on how many athletes that died in their prime that were a major thing in my life. And Roberto Clemente, I remember well. Then Thurman Munson, the catcher and the captain of the Yankees. And then, basketball-wise, from LMU, Hank Gathers.
Yes.
Yeah. He, those things were stunning. And Gathers didn't have the position in the world that Kobe or Munson or Clemente had. But it still was college basketball. And I don't know how old you were when that happened, but he died right on the court.
No, I mean, like, Hank Gathers dying, especially, like, growing up in L.A., you, like, playing in that gym. I played in that gym in several tournaments. So that gym, and when you think about those things, it has a different type of energy to it. People out this way, it's kind of like how people here in Louisville have a closer sentimental value to Muhammad Ali in some aspects. That's how Kobe is looked at out there, because when Magic got sick, nobody really understood what HIV was. I mean, you knew about it, but it wasn't like after Magic got sick, everybody paid attention to it. And everybody thought Magic wasn't going to die, was going to die, but he never died and he's lived to maintain his life. But you still get to see Magic and you still get to see Kareem and you get to see Jerry West.
James Worthy,
yep. Michael Cooper. Like I get to see those guys. I grew up watching Byron Scott. I still can see him. So when you think about the whole situation of him dying, it's a thing where you never feel like your legends will ever die, But more importantly, you feel like they'll be around so you can hear more of the stories. I feel like Bill Russell still being with us, you know, I'm glad his health is great. You still get to hear a lot of the stories that you probably never would have heard of if he died at 41. Like some of the stuff he went through at hotels and how him and Bob Cousy would go to hotels and he couldn't stay at the hotel. So then everybody, like Bob Cousy, was like, no, I'm not going to stay here. Obviously, Bill can't stay here. And they fought for those things. I just can't think of that. But the thing I think of the most is he was doing what we do every day. If you're a parent, taking your kids back and forth to something is something you always do. I'm not a parent, but I think of the fact that like me just taking my dog to the park and never coming back and the dog not coming back either. I know that a dog and a human are two different things, obviously, but that's just my example.
It's your correlation.
Yeah. So that's what I really think of. I mean, how many dads take their daughters to practice? Like how many dads out there are taking their kids to something? And that's where it messed me up more so than anything. It wasn't like he was doing something that he shouldn't have been doing. I still am kind of disturbed that their helicopter was allowed to take off, considering the fog conditions. Because LMPD, Los Angeles PD, not LMPD, Louisville, I mean not Louisville Metro's LMPD, but Los Angeles Police Department, they weren't flying their choppers. So that's a kind of a concerning factor for me.
Well, it's kind of like John Kennedy Jr. He wasn't qualified to fly the plane that he and his wife died in. He wasn't qualified for that one,
yeah.
As far as the controls, and you know he took off with had bad weather,
right?
And he knew he was going into bad weather, and you would think that maybe people would just think a little bit further out,
yeah.
than just getting something up and off. And wasn't it amazing the way Kobe had really adopted women's basketball? I thought that was just amazing.
No, I think it was great, and I think it was great for the NBA and the WNBA because you had a guy who was such a pillar in the game, stand up for women's basketball and want to represent it and want to make sure it's going to be something here to last. Because one of the things about the WNBA, it's always been not a moneymaker for the NBA, so they always go through the fighting of should they keep it or not. So for me, I think it's a thing of oh, there we go, fumble. No, it's okay. So I think it's a thing where when you have a guy like him backing the NBA, I think it's something that – and him having a concern about it, I feel like it would have brought a lot more attention to it. I don't know how much, but I think any attention is good attention in that scenario for it to grow. And his daughter was well on her way.
And he did a lot with the grassroots women's basketball. Mm-hmm. He would speak at clinics. He would speak to teams. He would go to games.
Yes.
Very involved in that piece of the business, and I thought that was quite interesting. And they lost somebody. Now, will anybody step into that void when they lost him? That will be interesting to see if that happens.
Yeah, I think, but I think that also goes into the fact that he had a daughter. So now it's a matter of who's next in line that's going to have a daughter and is going to push her to become the best possible player ever. Because you never get to see most guys that play sports. I remember Elgin Baylor said he would never let his kids play sports because of how the structure is. So the next thing is who's going to allow their daughter and push her to be that person? Like, I mean, LeBron James, I don't know if his daughter might want to play basketball or not. Would that be something he wants to push? He already has his son playing. The other son doesn't play. So the question is who's going to be the next superstar and then push their kid to be like great like Kobe was trying to push his daughter to be?
Well, but he was reaching out and trying to help a lot of people beyond his daughter. So I would say this, there's a void there without him. And I don't necessarily feel, Perrin, that you have to have a daughter. You might not have a daughter. You might have wanted one, but you had two boys or three boys,
right.
Okay? But you really wanted to help this particular segment of the basketball world. And you weren't as such a name as Kobe. You don't have to be, but you were a player of some stature and you decide to fill that void because you want to help young women become basketball players and better people.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it's going to be a very interesting phase right now to see who steps in there, if anybody does.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we'll get somebody. And he was just on the cusp of doing all the things that he wanted to do. So hopefully we find somebody else and we'll see where it goes. But I'm excited about this. And one of the reasons why we're talking about this is the UofL women on Super Bowl Sunday at 2 o'clock, I believe, they will be tipping off. They will be playing the women's USA team. So I think this is something that's really great because, you know, the exposure, more importantly, just playing against the women's team, be able to compete against them to show that you can play with the best players in the world, I think it goes a long way for these young ladies at this university, and I'm excited about it.
It absolutely does, and on that particular day, what a day to showcase, what a venue to have your game. Everybody's thinking sports. They may be thinking football.
Yes.
But there's a bunch of basketball people that also will go to this game and then go to their Super Bowl party. It makes it a bigger day. It's a real positive add-on to the day.
Well, I think the great thing about it is, you know, because the Super Bowl is going on Sunday, there is nothing else going on sports-related on Sunday.
That's
pretty
true.
Much.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's something that you could – it's a great breakup of the day and leads into the Super Bowl for me. I mean, that's great for me because I get to go watch the women's game. Then after I get to watch the women's game, I can hang back and then start into Super Bowl Sunday coverage rather than just having 8 hours of Super Bowl all day coverage.
That's way too much. Yeah. That's way, way too much.
No, 100%. So I think it's a great breakup, and it has a local tie to the team that we all love here. I mean, obviously around here if you live in the area. So I think it's a great thing. And not too many people can say they have those opportunities because – I couldn't imagine the U.S. Olympic team coming to play UK or U of L. And like, could you imagine before they're going to Tokyo? Like, that would be quite a thing in itself. I would really love to see that happen.
You kind of wonder why that hasn't happened. Is there some rule on the men's side that's not on the women's side? Or is it because all of that happens in the summer, all the training? The camps happen in the summer and teams aren't together and they're not allowed to have but a very limited practice time in the summer, mm-hmm. like 2 hours a week or something. It's individual instruction. That's all the time they have. So, you know, but that would be cool if you would – either team would be allowed to practice prior to and then test the U.S. Olympic team. And, boy, that would get a lot of interest around here also.
Yeah, you'd sell out the Yum Center, and I think you'd sell out Rupp Arena with no problem doing that. I think it would be something. And you can make it a week-long thing where the team goes out and interacts with local universities outside of, like, U of L, UK. So if you're in Lexington, it'd be Transylvania and so forth. And you can go down to Berea if you wanted to just, you know, cultivate some culture and having the team around them. Or even here in Louisville with Spalding and Bellarmine and so forth, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. They have to have practice time anyway. Now, so they're either going to practice at the facility, I think it's out in Vegas where they practice, or you're going to come back here for 2 or 3 days before you play a game and you're moving on. But I like that idea. I have to ask around why that's never happened. And my answer, I think, is it's in the summertime.
Absolutely. And we are going to be having Coach Walls on, I believe, Nick. At what time are we going to have Coach Walls on?
Well, he's actually at the Team USA practice right now, just scouting, and now he's talking to because Coach Walls, you know, is involved with that. So just chit-chatting with some of the coaches I've been talking to, Nick Evans. So we're probably going to have him at 1:45. So in the meantime, I'm grabbing it right now. I want to get a quick soundbite. We are airing in Lexington. On our ESPN 1300, our friends down there. Talk a little UK, maybe shift gears a little bit. And I'm just going to throw the soundbite out from Peter Burns on earlier this week. And give me 1 second. I have to track this bad boy down. But because I just got the message from Nick that we're going to have to reschedule a little bit. A lot of moving parts today. Apologize. Appreciate everyone's patience. But just kind of Peter Burns was just talking about how Cal's kind of having to change things up a little bit. This season, and I thought I might as well get the UK luminary Mike Pratt and you know, the former player, and you walk in both worlds, U of L and UK, and so always value your opinion, PJ. So definitely get that. But before we do that, we are airing in Lexington, but they always like to support good causes up there. ESPN Louisville, they've committed to braving the cold and getting freezing for a reason to show our support for the over 10,200 Special Olympic athletes in the state of Kentucky. That's right. We're raising money for a chance to jump into icy cold water for a great cause. All the donations that go to the ESPN Louisville team will go to Special Olympics Kentucky to provide year-round sports training and competition opportunities to children and adults with intellectual disabilities. Our goal is $3,000. I've got confidence that we are going to easily surpass that, because if you do raise the $3,000, you're going to get to see Drew Diener, Mark Ennis, Andy Sweeney, You, Perrin Johnson. Perrin Johnson, myself, Patty Ice, Ethan Moore, Phil Baker, Jason Ensign, Don Yates, all hopping in the freezy Arctic tundra waters that is the Ohio. Find the link to donate on ESPNLouisville.com and on our social media pages, or go to the Louisville Polar Plunge website and search Team ESPN Louisville, the Polar Plunge jump date, February 22nd at the Middletown, Texas Roadhouse. Want to start your own team? Go to LouisvillePlunge.com. I cannot wait. I'm debating if I want to wear a Speedo and like a swim cap, but I don't want to be the only one.
I don't remember even agreeing to do this.
Oh, there was so much drama behind the scenes here.
Yeah, I heard my name yesterday for the first time. So to hear it again today, I got the Scooby-Doo face, like they call it. Shaggy? I don't remember agreeing to Polar Plunge. I don't enjoy being cold at all. However, it's for a good cause, so I will bite the bullet. But Perrin does not remember signing Perrin up.
I've been there, done that.
Yeah, you got kind of volunteered. Done that. You did the Polar Plunge, Mike?
No, but I've had been cast into certain situations where you go like, what? What am I in? How did I get here?
I feel like somebody asked, you know, I feel like if somebody asks you, and like they ask you when you're busy or you're in the middle of like two things, and you just say yes.
And now you're over your head.
100%. That's exactly where I'm at right
but
now.
But I want to take pictures of Nick in his swim skull cap and his Speedo. I think that would be great.
I mean,
have that out there. Have it on the ESPN Louisville website.
There you go.
You know, yeah.
Just remind everybody that it's really cold. I don't want anyone getting the wrong idea. But I just...
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? Oh, how you doing? Boom. How deep is the water? Because I'm not a great swimmer. That's the only thing I'm a little nervous
about.
You're
afraid the current's going to take you downstream?
I'm afraid I'm going to get a butt cramp and not be able to like swim out of there, and then everyone's going to be like, we need to rescue them.
It is you. So you will have a crowd. Matter of fact, you probably ought to set it up to where you could sell tickets to see you jump in.
Just me. And
just
see
you,
me flounder around. And
yeah.
That could be pretty entertaining. By the way, I feel bad. New York Mike called. And just to set up the show, I'm going to play this soundbite here of Peter Burns on earlier with Bobby V and get your guys' thoughts on it. But it is Super Bowl time. And Jerry Brewer of the Washington Post will join, talk a little bit about that, talk a little bit of Kobe. But I feel bad. I told New York Mike that we weren't able to get him on because we had a ton of guests and everything like that. We did, but, you know, there's been a lot of moving around. So I wanted to share his picks. He said to take the Chiefs -1 and to take the under at 54. And so I'm just passing along New York Mike's pick.
I like the under, but I'm a 49ers guy.
All right, well, there you go. And he also said to say hi to you, Mike. And he didn't know you were filling in. I'm sure he would have said hi to
you. That's okay.
As well,
I mean,
there.
New York Mike's my guy anyway. And I like the Niners, and I like the under.
Yeah.
I hate this. I you know, Patrick Mahomes is godly great, but Joey Bosa's an animal on the end. And the rest of that defense is just, I haven't seen a defensive end this fast in quite some time, I feel like. I don't know, but Joey Bosa's been lighting NFL on fire since he came in my opinion.
The Bosa boys are pretty good football players,
yeah,
to say the least.
Man, right? Create a kid, you want to take some of their Geno and throw it into yours and see what you get, I tell you.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little Kentucky basketball, right? And you've got, who do you have?
This is Peter Burns of the SEC Network.
Okay.
He was on here on ESPN Louisville, 680-1057. Yesterday, he joined the program. And it had.
Is he play by play guy?
He's a studio analyst.
Oh, okay. I don't know him.
Yeah, really, really nice guy. Offers some pretty decent analysis, I think. It has Pops asking the question, but we saw a little bit of zone in the Vandy game. And basically, just is this something that we might be seeing a little bit more going further?
It's interesting, though, not to play the 2020 hindsight game, which is always easy when things work, but I thought. All along, Kentucky's personnel should lend itself well to playing zone. They're long and they're athletic, mm-hmm. and you know they got some guys who can go rebound. And frankly, I thought the same for Louisville. That's another topic. We'll get into that elsewhere. And Louisville actually turned their game around by going zone. I don't know if you want to make a steady diet of it, but I don't know when it became such a bad word. Heck, you watch the Miami Heat now; they're playing it in the NBA. I mean, it fell out of vogue for some reason for so long, and I don't know why. And especially now with the 3-point line backed up a little bit. I think
right.
If you got athletes, you can do some damage with it, and Kentucky did. But I think you're probably right. It's probably more just It's really hard to get up for a team that hasn't won a conference game since the Woodrow Wilson administration. You know, I mean, that's what you're looking at, basically.
But here's the deal. Going back to right, like the Heat run a little bit of zone, but outside of that, it's always traditionally been a man-to-man or, you know, maybe a little diamond here and there, but really mostly just man-to-man defense. And so I think for Cal, he's always looked at it and go, no, listen, you know, not zones for cowards by any means or anything like that, but he figures, hey, I'm teaching you to come to Kentucky to play NBA-style basketball here. And with the height differential and the athletic differential he normally has at Kentucky, you're right. I mean, if Cal was saying, hey, we're just going to play Syracuse-type zone, we're going to just rely on our size, and if you could beat this in the outside shot, good luck at Rupp Arena. He doesn't do that, and I'm wondering if that maybe starts saying, all right, this is another at least, you know, tool I can use going forward, because I think now there is a little bit of anxiousness among Wildcat fans to think, hey, we got a great team. We love Cal. We love the players. We love all the McDonald's All-Americans. But when are we going to win another title? And I think it would be, you know, it would behoove him to take a look at every option going forward to see if he can actually cut down the net.
Well, that's interesting commentary. But I'm going to take you back to Calipari's tree, started with Larry Brown, who's a man-to-man coach, okay? Mm-hmm. Even when Cal was at Massachusetts, he played just a little bit of zone, played mostly man-to-man. He is firmly, like a lot of coaches, entrenched in man-to-man. And coaches can be stubborn, right, Perrin?
Yeah.
Right? They can be very stubborn.
Takes a good assistant to get them out of that.
And in talking with him, you know, over time, he feels that players are held more accountable when you play man-to-man versus zone. Because if you're playing a zone consistently, guys can say, well, I didn't know it was his man, it was your man, bop, 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 every excuse in the world. I didn't have anybody in my area to box out.
Right.
And then, of course, you watch it on the tape and you go like, okay, that's not right. But if you want to call somebody out about how they played in the locker room, you put the tape up and you show them, Perrin, Nick got by you. He Linda Ronstadted you from the top of the circle. There's no excuse about you were going over here to help somebody. There's no excuse that you didn't see him, that you were looking around in the zone.
Right.
The accountability piece for man-to-man is really important. It's really important to Calipari in his teaching. Now, I don't think it's got anything to do with the NBA because Calipari was this way going back to Massachusetts and Memphis. He was a man-to-man. That's his reputation, man-to-man, whether you – have got the All-Americans and you're going to the pros. And he's a man-to-man guy. And it's kind of like Bo, the guy that coached at Wisconsin for years.
Bo Ryan. Yeah, Bo Ryan, yes.
Okay, so we're getting ready to play Wisconsin, Perrin, in the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow coaching at Ohio State then, Jim O'Brien, was a teammate of mine with the Colonels. We stayed up. We were friends. And so I called OB up and I said, OB, tell me about Wisconsin. Tell me, you know, you played them. Just give me some background. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to ask you how to beat them. I just need background. And so he goes through all the players, blah, blah, blah. And not following Wisconsin as closely over the years as maybe some,
right.
I ask a stupid question. I said, well, will he play in his own? OB got quiet on the other end. He says, maybe if you put him in his grave, he might think about it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Bo Ryan's that way.
Yeah.
I mean, he's that way.
I mean,
there's a lot of coaches that way. They're just committed for whatever the reason. They're committed to that man-to-man come hell or high water.
No, I mean, and you can say the same thing about Jim Boeheim.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to get out of that zone.
Yeah. So it's funny. So, like, with the background that I have, Rick Pitino wants you to run up and down and be in great shape. And Jim Boeheim likes to keep the guys fresh. He doesn't push them in conditioning. He encourages them to do in conditioning on their own, get in the weight room, and just be more accountable. But he doesn't want to push guys. He wants guys to just, you know, so that's why they sit back in the zone. They got guys that are long. So that's why him and Coach Pitino disagreed, because one wanted to have guys in tip-top shape. Yes, and the other one was a little bit more free. So it's just kind of funny, because when I see John Calipari play man-to-man, I think part of those guys can play zone, But you don't want to – that's not the style of play because – and I feel like with a guy like Tyrese Maxey and a guy like Ashton Hagans, those guys can really play some defense. And if you put them in 2-3, while maybe somebody's in foul trouble, I think at times you take away from how good they are as defenders and let them be who they are to wreak havoc on guys in the half court. Like if I'm – I would love – like that last possession when Ashton Hagans had to guard that kid from Texas Tech – and how he stripped the ball off his leg.
On the drive.
Yeah. Like if he's playing man to man, you don't make that guy uncomfortable to make a play like that if he's playing zone. So I like it. I'm a man to man type of guy. I feel like you can play zone at times, like, but I'm a man to man type of guy. So Cal playing man to man and then switching to zone, I think is a great changeup from time to time. And I don't mind it at all. But I like the man to man that he plays because of his personnel.
Well, I think that many years ago, and Boeheim is an old school guy, and the zone's more acceptable.
Yeah.
And they were run differently than they are now. But why I like the zone just in short doses, if you're going to play them,
yeah.
And the reason is, I think you touched on it, is it messes up the rhythm or can mess up the rhythm of the offensive team.
Yeah.
If they're rolling, for example, if they're rolling and they decide, you decide that you can't stop them off the high pick and roll, turn the corner, you can't keep him out of the paint.
Right.
What's wrong with going to a zone for 2 or 3 possessions? That's all. Just to get them to stop, think about what they're doing versus just running right into that pick and going to the paint. Just a change of pace to try to knock their rhythm back a little bit, let you breathe a little bit, because if they're wearing you out, you can't keep the ball out of the paint, you got real problems in this day and age.
Yeah.
At Arkansas, it did exactly that. They only played it 4 or 5 minutes or less.
Mm-hmm.
And it took Arkansas rushed some shots and then had shots where they tried to move it around.
Yeah.
And they took shots at the end of the shot clock that were rushed. So it did take them out of their tempo. South Carolina did it to Kentucky in Columbia a few weeks ago. They went to a zone
right
late in the game. Just, you know, and Frank Martin's a man-to-man guy. Now, trust me, he's a hard-nosed man-to-man guy who will play some zone. He went to the zone when he thought they had an advantage or were making a run at Kentucky,
right,
and they were in the last 8 minutes, 10 minutes. They're making a run, so he said, hey, I'll just do one other thing. We're rolling offensively. I'm going to change this defense for a few minutes,
yeah,
a few possessions. And it'll work sometimes, and sometimes it won't. Back in the day, you had a steady diet. Teams were zone teams. How many teams have you seen, Perrin, outside of Syracuse that would be called a zone team?
I can't think of a lot of teams that are just, like, you know you're going to get
zone. Bread and butter, zone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Coach Beilein, when he was at West Virginia, he used to play a ton of 1-3-1. Yeah.
Very good at it, too.
Yeah, man. Then they did some of that in Michigan, but not a ton of it because their personnel was better than they could guard. So, for me, I can't think of too many teams that were just like, oh, you know you're going to see zone when you see this team. I can't think of a lot of teams like that anymore.
People play zone now because they don't like the matchups that they get,
mm-hmm,
or they're trying to change the flow, the rhythm of the game by doing it. And some of them just say, look, we're going to go up the floor. If we want to change the rhythm, we're going to take our team defensively up the floor in a three-quarter or full-court pressure to,
yeah,
try to disrupt somebody, to try to make the team you're playing go deeper in the shot clock before they even get a chance to look at the basket.
Yes.
So that's kind of taking the place of the zone from what I see.
No, I think the main thing is, like it goes back to what you said, if I'm playing against UK and Tyrese Maxey and Ashton Hagans are constantly getting the lane, I might go zone. But then now I got to worry about, can I block out EJ Montgomery and Nick Richards? So that's the way I look at it. So the question, if you ask yourself, if you were to Kentucky, can I go do this and block out and rebound? Because that's where they typically have success, when they rebound over 30% of their shots. But for me, I don't mind Cal doing it. I think it's a good changeup. If somebody's scoring in the game and they're on a run and you're on a run, I think that's a great thing to do, is hit him with some 2-3 zone. And Kentucky did that, obviously, against Vanderbilt, and I was all for it.
Well, Bob's point about having the length and be able to stretch out and stretch the zone out is true, and that can be effective. But, again, in short doses, I think is more beneficial. By the way, you've seen a lot of basketball. Have you ever seen a young fella make the development that Nick Richards has?
Not over time, considering how long he's been playing. No, and what that tells you is he's in the gym.
Yep,
and he's working to see where. And the greatest thing about it is, I didn't anticipate him being a key figure in the offense. I thought he'd be a great rim protector, a guy that sets good screens,
like a Willie Cauley Stein.
Yeah, cleans up some stuff, a rim runner. But he, like yesterday, somebody drove to the middle of the paint, and he was on the block. And when they drove middle, he stepped out to 17 feet, and he hit that jumper right in front of the UK bench. And I was like, he's out of here. I mean, there's no reason why he should come back to school. I think he's only going to get better because he's just tapping into his ability. And, I mean, I didn't think he was going to be a guy that's going to lead the team in scoring.
I didn't either. No, and I've been a Knick fan as long as he's been in Lexington. But to lead the team in scoring ahead of those guards, that would have been far-fetched.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I wasn't thinking that.
Because they have the ball more than he has.
Somebody has to give him the ball.
Right.
Yes.
But he is, man, I'm telling you what, Perrin. Gee, this young fella. He takes pride, and it's interesting to watch him. He takes pride. Everybody runs screens or pick and rolls, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Ball screens, pick and rolls. He'll switch out. They'll let him show big, hedge and show big on guards.
Yes.
And I know they're fearful that he'll foul. In the last 2 years, he has fouled in those situations.
Yeah.
He's handling them so well now. His feet laterally, he spreads out at 7 foot. He's got a nice wide base.
Mm-hmm.
And he's keeping, for the most part, these guards from turning the corner.
Yes.
And he's staying out of foul trouble, for the most part. And that, when he gets in foul trouble, that presents some real problems for Kentucky.
Yeah, and I tell you what, they got a good problem because he's playing well and Maxey and Higgins are playing well. But their problem, I think their thing is that when E.J. Montgomery starts getting it going again, they're going to be a problem. Because I think he's starting to scratch at the surface of what he was at the end of the season last year to take it to another level. And the timing of where he's figuring out a little bit, I think, is going to be something where you don't want to play Kentucky here in the coming months.
Well, what I want to see them do is put Higgins or Maxey with the ball, or quickly, any of the three,
yeah,
and let Sestina and EJ set the pick or the screen, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm,
and slip. You may have to set it and reset it, but you get in a situation
like a
where,
double screen up top.
Well, you could double screen, but okay, sometimes, you know, you have a single screen,
yes,
and a guy goes by and you don't get that switch that you want, big on little.
Yes.
Well, then you come back and reset it, go the other way, just trying to get enough of a separation to let EJ and Nate shoot the ball. EJ can shoot that. He's really struggled with his confidence. But you put him in those situations where, and again, it may take go to the right, come back and reuse it again to create big on little is,
yeah,
what you want.
Absolutely.
And they can shoot over and they can shoot that shot. When that happens, that's going to free up an awful lot. When that happens consistently, that's going to free up an awful lot for Kentucky offensively. Because everybody wants the ball screen and the picks. Everybody plays those,
yeah,
regardless,
yeah,
okay? So you're either a roller to the basket,
right,
if you're setting that screen or that pick, or you're a guy who fades for the jump shot. One of the two. You're no good unless you can do one of the two.
No, you
got to
be capable of doing one or the other.
Yeah.
There's no in between.
So when that happens, I think, Perrin, that's going to bring a different dimension into the offense. It'll open it up for the big guy because Nick, at that point, could be down at the block.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're going to go ahead and we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. I think we should have Coach Walls on by then. Hopefully he's done.
I told you we need a break. I'm sorry, guys. We're producing on the fly here. I can call right now and get a quick little Super Bowl preview from our boy Jerry Brewer, who from Courier Journal.
Well, let's come out of the break and get that.
All right, so we'll take a short break. We'll get Jerry on. And then we'll get Coach Walls on the fly. How's about that?
Got it.
All right, sounds good. You're listening to Fast Break Friday. Perrin Johnson in for Bobby V. Mike Pratt, the UK luminary, emanating from the Papa John's studios here in Louisville. You're listening to ESPN 680, 105.7 in the PNV Network.
What book of today? All, 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 I really, really, really. stand up next to you.
Welcome back to Fast Break Friday, emanating from the ESPN 680 105 studios in Louisville and Aaron in Lexington and Frankfort. Perrin Johnson, Mike Pratt, and yours truly, Nick Valvano, in for Bobby B, who went down on the, not the IR, just the DL, with a little bit of a lost voice earlier
overnight
today.
DL.
Yeah, overnight. Yeah, it's day-to-day. We'll see, how it goes. But scheduled to join us and very patient with his time, formerly of the Courier-Journal. Currently with the Washington Post, Jerry Brewer joins us with maybe a little Super Bowl preview and a little Kobe Bryant talk. Jerry, welcome into the program. How are you, sir?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
Are you in Miami, Jerry?
Yes, I am. Oh. The corner of Miami.
Okay, Jerry. Jerry, it's Perrin Johnson. How you doing, man? What part of Miami that got you down there staying at, man?
You know what? Unfortunately, they have us out by the Miami airport. And right now it's incredibly difficult to get down the South Beach into the parts where you really want to be. So I'm a little salty.
No, I can understand. You got to go across the causeway. If I tell you what, though, downtown, if you're downtown, I don't know if they still have it down there, but if you're into cigars, they got a Monte Cristo cigar bar downtown. It's one of my favorite places to go to down there.
Well, you know what? I might have been there a time or two in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, you need to go over to Little Havana if you want to find one of those cigar makers. Man, they got a couple of them over there that were pretty sweet. But well, the only thing, Jerry, you can do at South Beach is probably get in trouble, right?
Or look at people getting in trouble.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Well, we know you're not going to get into trouble. But I want to start this off with you. And one of the things I want to talk to you about is you recently published an article about the NFL has become a tight end league. And when you look at this game going into Super Bowl Sunday, Travis Kelce and George Kittle are two guys that are just oozing with talent and potential. And Travis Kelce, we've seen a lot more of him than George Kittle. What are your thoughts on this game going into this game?
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible matchup there, a tight end. And especially when you think a lot of people kind of have this preconceived notion that you're going to throw to the tight end as a crutch, you know, a quarterback who needs to complete an easy pass, and that a tight end-led offense isn't necessarily an explosive one. And you've got two teams that rank in the top five in the NFL in scoring, and their leading receivers are tight ends. And, I mean, George Kittle, you know, if the nation doesn't understand how good he is, they're going to see how much he impacts the game every down, because he's a ferocious run blocker. And he's a good route runner. He's incredibly fast. He's the key to their entire offense. And then on the other end, as much as the Chiefs spread the ball around and all the fast receivers that they have, the guy they're going to go to most often is Travis Kelce. You know, it's interesting. You look at, I think he had 97 receptions this year. As much as we talk about Tyreek Hill had 58 receptions. And a lot of what they do, and a lot of that's, I mean, the defense is so afraid of his speed that they have to kind of account for that, and he kind of tilts the field, and they're able to get it to Kelce and Sammy Watkins and others. But he is the dominant weapon in that passing game. It's where things start, and it's where when the 49ers, especially in their linebacking core, have to have some answer for him. And the other thing I like about both of those guys is the run after the catch. I mean, they will drag you like they are a bell cow running back. They're both incredibly fun to watch, and they're incredibly fun-loving people. So they will be, you know, in a game that has Richard Sherman, that has Patrick Mahomes, there's a good chance that those tight ends will be the stars of the game.
Okay, Jerry, that you like the tight ends, but you know they've had 2 weeks to prepare. They've had a whole season of tape. Is there a guy or a position beyond the tight ends? And usually this happens. There's a guy walk out of nowhere, become a star because of all the scouting that's done. Who do you think could be a star for either team that maybe we're not talking about?
You know, I mean, it gets a little bit difficult because, you know, I think, you know, these teams have such dominant stars. But let's look at the Niners. We focus so much attention on Bosa and Buckner and Armstead and all their defensive linemen, and they're incredible. But I think for them to really do some things in this game, Fred Warner, their middle linebacker, incredibly fast, one of the most underrated sideline-to-sideline linebackers. I think if they're going to cause some problems for the Kansas City offense, I think he'll be in the middle of it. So I think that's a name to remember. You know, on the other side, it gets harder. But I think Mecole Hardman, and people should know him. But as a rookie, he didn't catch as many passes for the Chiefs. But I think as the Niners try to key on some people, I could see him making a couple of big plays and really surprising some people. So I would look at those two as somewhat underrated players who could have a big impact on Sunday.
Yes, and so when you look at this game, everybody's talking about, obviously, the offenses and the defenses. Do you think, you know, this game has a different type of pedigree? You have, obviously, Kyle Shanahan, his father, has two Super Bowl rings. You know, he's been there, but this is his first time being a head coach in this situation. And then you have Andy Reid on the other side. When you look at this coaching standpoint of what both of these coaches are bringing to the table, who do you feel more comfortable with this one? I mean, I know Andy Reid's been there, but Kyle Shanahan kind of has too, and not in the same aspect as a head coach, but he has been there in some degree.
Yeah, it's an interesting matchup among the two coaches. I mean, Kyle Shanahan's only 40 years old, but, I mean, he has coached in the Super Bowl as the offensive coordinator in Atlanta, blew a Super Bowl, got a lot to blame for that 28-3 and him passing too much with Matt Ryan. So it just kind of seems like he's been around the block. I mean, he's been the offensive coordinator for about four teams. So, you know, it seems like even though he's 40 and only in his third year of a coaching job, it seems like he's been chasing this excellence. And you almost feel like the game kind of owes it to him for the impact that he's had. No one is more deserving than Andy Reid, and he should be a sentimental favorite for just about everyone who's not rooting for one of the teams. So I'd like to see him win this. I mean, 61 years old, in 21 seasons as a head coach. He's made the playoffs 15 times. He's won 14 postseason games. In his career, he has 221 victories, which ranks sixth all-time. You look at the coaches that are ahead of him on the all-time victory list, and you've got Bill Belichick, Curly Lambeau, George Halas, you know, the real giants of the game. And so to think that, you know, Andy Reid has a borderline Hall of Fame resume, and the only thing that's missing is the Super Bowl. If he gets it, I think it would be incredible. I mean, I think about when I was at the Courier, I think about, you know, going to the 2005 Final Four because UofL made it. But that Final Four wound up being Roy Williams winning his first national title, North Carolina beating Illinois. And you think about, like, how long his journey was. It didn't make him a better coach, but it made us look at him in a different light. And I think it could be similar for Andy Reid.
Well, for all those reasons, Jerry, that you just gave, does that add a – I mean, there's enough pressure playing in this game and 2 weeks off leading up and all that goes with it. That put a little bit more pressure on Andy Reid and the Chiefs?
I think so. I mean, I think they're the NFL's glamour team, and it almost feels like in a lot of ways we have already – you know, branded them as great. And you look at the kind of praise that they get, you know, it's almost like they've already won a couple championships. And that's just because their offense is so explosive, so dynamic. Patrick Mahomes is so good. And the Niners just kind of came out of nowhere, right? I mean, they were 4-12 a year ago. mostly because Garoppolo got hurt. So it does feel like Kansas City's time is now, even though it seems like because of their youth that they have a window to be good for a really long time. It doesn't often work that way in the NFL. So you got to get yours when you can get it. And so there's a tremendous amount of pressure on them to break through and to finally win it for Andy.
No, absolutely. And so I want to ask you, when you look at this game and this matchup between a juggernaut of an offense, a juggernaut of a defense, who do you see winning this game and why is that team going to win this game?
You know, I mean, the more I look at it, and maybe I'm a little more NFC biased because, I've covered the Niners' run so far, and they've just been so good just mauling people in their run game, and we know how good their defense is. I really look at them, though, and look at the numbers and everything, and I think they are the more complete team. Their passing game is underrated. They haven't had to use it in the postseason, so people have this misguided notion that Jimmy Garoppolo can't throw to win games. He can. We know what their run game is. We know what their defense is. Their front seven is dynamic, but you still got Richard Sherman on the back end. They don't have a lot of weaknesses. However, Kansas City is more balanced than people realize. And if you look at the second half of the year, or really like the last 10 games of the year, what they had to do defensively, partly because Mahomes got hurt, that helped them really balance out their team. So their defense is better than people imagine. So that gets them close. And if they're close enough, I think that Patrick Mahomes is just the difference maker. And I think that's why they're going to win this game. I think the 49ers are the better overall football team. But I think the Chiefs are close enough, and Patrick Mahomes makes the difference. So I see it being a one-score Super Bowl and a really fun game for us all to watch. But in the end, I think Mahomes is going to be the difference. And not only is he going to be the difference, but we're going to have to somehow, in our mindset, this is the greatest young quarterback the NFL has ever seen. And we've seen other guys, you know, he's 24. We've seen guys in that 23 to 25 range win titles. We've seen Ben Roethlisberger do it. We've seen Tom Brady do it. We've seen Russell Wilson do it. Patrick Mahomes, I think, would be the second youngest quarterback to win it if he can get it done. But the difference between him and all those other guys when they were young is that they were not the focal points of their offense. They became MVP caliber players later. They became Hall of Fame players over the course of a number of 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 years. Patrick Mahomes is that dude now. And if he's able to get this done and be the difference maker in this game, we're going to have to wrap our minds around the fact that he's an animal we have not seen in the history of this game. And that's pretty incredible.
Absolutely. Jerry, I appreciate you having some time with us out here. I hope you enjoy Miami and it treats you right. I tell you what, there's a place you want to go to. It's on the island. It's go to a place called Bodegas. It's great.
Bodegas.
Yeah, okay. It's got a good local feel to it. You won't be out in there with all the out-of-townies. It's all just an in-townie bar, so it'll be a nice, good, relaxing place.
Thank you for the suggestion. I'm going to have to take you up on that.
Now we know where to find Jerry.
Absolutely. Appreciate your bunches, man. Thanks.
All right, take care.
Yep.
All right, that was awesome, guys. On the other side of this break locally here, we'll hear Coach Cal's comments. Mike, you got to get out of here. Safe travels, my friend. Pops, feel better. It's Fast Break Friday. Perrin Johnson, Mike Pratt, right here from ESPN 680 105 Studios.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.